Welcome to the Sunshine Economy, Amendment 1, paying to protect Florida by the acre and the gallon. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. You know the old saying about real estate in South Florida, right? It dates back to the first decades of last century. Henry Flagler's railroad had come to the region. Acres of previously submerged swampland was drying out and being used for farming. Oceanfront mangroves were ripped out and replaced with palm trees, hotels, and mansions. Canals were carved through the oolite limestone. Levees of dirt were built up. Ribbons of roads were laid down. And what would lead to the modern South Florida of today began to emerge from the muck and the mosquitoes. They were selling land by the gallon. That was the old saying back then. It's attributed to an out-of-state real estate investor who had bought land in what is today Fort Lauderdale. Only in 1911, the land was underwater. Back then, Florida's strategy was to attract settlers to the state with its Everglades reclamation policy, essentially drain the glades. Well, a century later, the Everglades has not been drained. It has been protected. Some argue, though, not enough. Florida's modern history is one of a battle between the environment and the economy. Statewide, about one in every 4 acres of land is in public hands. More than 9 million acres are managed by government agencies in Florida, local, state, and federal. But is it enough to protect what's left of Florida's wild places, to ensure clean water and a thriving agricultural industry, to help those struggling to find affordable housing and preserve shores? Florida voters will decide whether environmental preservation becomes part of the state constitution this fall. On the ballot, it's called Amendment 1. It is a citizens' initiative born from nearly a million petition signatures. The amendment would set aside a percentage of revenue from real estate fees to pay for water and land conservation for the next 20 years. The ballot question is not birds versus builders, affordable housing advocates against American alligators, at least not according to those against the proposal. We will hear from them this hour. We'll hear from supporters as well. Supporters even say it's process that matters here. It's not an issue of whether or not Florida wants to pay to protect its environment, or really even where the money comes from. Instead, the central issue of this proposed constitutional amendment is, should state money be guaranteed to safeguard Florida's lands and water? WLRN Miami Herald reporter Gina Jordan in Tallahassee talked with supporters and those who say anything that impacts the state budget should not be in the state constitution.
The vote yes on one campaign is getting the word out with ads like this.
Our Everglades are threatened. Not just these magical places, but the plants and animals that make it their home. And the drinking water supply for 7 million South Florida residents.
Campaign manager Will Averger says citizens took action because the legislature hasn't done enough to fund conservation efforts.
Amendment 1 draws on an existing revenue source that's been the historic source of funding for water and land conservation for decades. The legislature diverted those funds, and what Amendment 1 will do is restore them and give them constitutional protection.
The amendment will be funded by revenue from documentary stamp taxes, known as dock stamps. The dock stamp fee is paid every time real estate is sold in Florida. Revenue from dock stamps has been used to protect water bodies, drinking water sources, and wildlife habitats for more than 2 decades. The revenue funds a lot of other programs and services, too, but Averger says the amendment will have little or no impact on those.
Amendment 1 sets aside 33% of the existing fee, so this is not a new tax. That's the first thing. It's very important to remember. There were times when more than 50% of the dock stamp was used for water and land conservation.
Government watchdog Florida Tax Watch hasn't taken a position on the amendment, but Tax Research Vice President Kurt Winter says putting this kind of spending into the Constitution instead of state law limits flexibility when the legislature creates the state budget.
There may be a general revenue shortfall, but 33% of dock stamps is still going to have to go to that area. The legislature does a lot of things to balance a budget. There's a lot of different ways they can move money around and decide how much spending to go in certain areas. So this kind of just ties their hands a little bit more.
If the proposal were in state statutes instead of the Constitution, lawmakers would have a lot more flexibility. Winner says in 5 of the last 11 years, the legislature put more money into environmental causes than is required by the amendment, because funding also comes from places like general revenue. So while the amendment requires a minimum percentage of spending on water and land efforts, lawmakers could decide that's all those programs will get.
It could be that, okay, 33% is going to go for these programs, so that's how much money we're going to spend. It's not assured, in our view, and also in the legislature's economic development office that did the financial impact statement on this, that this will increase spending for any of these programs.
Lobbyist Karen Woodall has no issue with the goal of Amendment 1, but she too disagrees with putting budgetary items into the Constitution.
When you're locked in the Constitution, you can't change them except with a 60% vote after either the legislature or the public puts things on the ballot.
Woodall has other concerns about the amendment as someone who lobbies the legislature on issues related to health and human services. Dock stamp fees fund everything from transportation to affordable housing programs to oyster management and restoration.
So when you take a percentage out of the monies raised from the dock stamp, you're going to squeeze other things that are funded using the same dollars.
The amendment has supporters and opponents across political parties. Florida's Republican Senate President and House Speaker oppose it. Former Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum, also a Republican, is speaking in favor of it.
We really do need in the state to have a dedicated tax fund for that purpose. You know, sometimes legislatures get other priorities in their minds at the moment, and they don't provide a consistent source of funding for some of the critical things that really are needed now, not 10 years from now or 15 years from now when it may be too late.
Will Abiger with the Yes on One campaign believes the amendment will increase funding for water and land conservation and says people shouldn't worry about it being placed in the Constitution.
Amendment 1 is really less than 1% of the $77 billion state budget. The first year it's projected to generate about $648 million. Surely we can set aside at least 1% of our state budget.
60% of voters will have to approve Amendment 1 in order for it to pass. I'm Gina Jordan in Tallahassee.
There's a lot of numbers being thrown at voters. 33% of documentary stamp tax revenue, less than 1% of the state budget, 60% necessary for the measure to pass. Well, let's break down some of the financial numbers at least. First, if approved, just how much money would be guaranteed? I understand it's a percentage of the documentary stamp tax revenue that's collected each year. A third of that would go toward the environment. Supporters say that would be almost $650 million next year, and that would double by the end of the 20 years called for under the proposal, to almost $1.3 billion collected in its final year. In all, over two decades, the amendment would guarantee, according to forecasts, more than $18 billion to protect and restore Florida lands and water. Of course, that presumes the tax rate holds steady and Florida real estate remains attractive to buy. After all, this tax is collected on every real estate transaction in the Sunshine State. The higher the sales price, the more tax the state collects.
I think that it's very important that the state invest in a comprehensive plan in terms of protecting and preserving the environment, preserving some of the natural habitat in the state of Florida that makes Florida such a attractive place to live and visit.
That's real estate developer Don Peebles. He's built buildings from Miami Beach to the Keys, New York, Las Vegas, and Washington, D.C. He's a Florida voter, and he supports Amendment 1.
I don't think it drives up land prices per se. I think ultimately it forces the government leaders to begin to quickly look at how to revitalize our land use policies for, you know, the future, to make us a sustainable economy, for the future.
It also sets up potentially a lawmaking legislative competition for other agencies interested in using those same tax dollars. If these dollars are guaranteed for Florida's environment, what could that mean for other programs that depend on the same real estate transaction taxes? That's still to come on the Sunshine Economy.
The problem with Amendment 1 is that it's going to be taking a huge slice of the pie of dock stamps for the environmental programs, and that puts other programs that are funded by dock stamps at risk.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Amendment 1, paying to protect Florida by the acre and the gallon. I'm Tom Hudson. So what's your favorite protected place in Florida? Maybe it's your neighborhood park, a favorite fishing spot, perhaps something more utilitarian like a water storage area out west. Well, as Floridians vote on whether or not to guarantee state funding for the environment, let us know what your favorite place is. Send us a tweet at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. In a good year, Broward County gets $15 million from the state for affordable housing programs. It has not been a good year for a number of years, though. When the housing market collapsed and the state budget came under pressure, lawmakers in Tallahassee diverted money away from affordable housing programs for general use. Ralph Stone is the director of housing finance and community development for Broward County.
After this the recession, when the legislature started sweeping the funding out, it went down to almost zero for probably 3 or 4 years. This most recent year, it's back up to one half of what it used to be. So countywide, you know, we're in the neighborhood of $7 million.
The money Ralph Stone uses in Broward County comes from the same place for much of the money to protect Florida's land and water, the real estate documentary stamp tax. It's the same pot of money Amendment 1 would guarantee for the environment, but no guarantees for affordable housing.
If a third of the doc stamp budget bucket is associated with this environmental constitutional amendment, that leaves less money available for the legislature to fund all of its services and those that are have been earmarked for the doc stamp. So it basically creates, in my opinion, an unlevel playing field for the doc stamp revenue.
Affordable housing advocates like Stone in Broward County are quick and careful to explain they are not against state funding for environment protection and restoration. They just think it should be a competitive environment each spring during the legislative budget writing process to convince lawmakers what programs get the doc stamp tax funding and by how much. The tax stamp collects 70 cents for every $100 when a piece of Florida real estate is bought and sold. So, on a $200,000 home, this doc stamp fund would collect $1,400. The rate is slightly lower in Miami-Dade County for single-family dwellings. Now, all that money goes into a fund. It's been collecting about $25 million per week this year. That's about $1.5 billion a year. First, the State Department of Revenue takes a little off the top for its administrative costs. Then the state grabs 8% for general purposes. Then a chunk is used to pay interest rates on bonds that have been used to raise money to pay for environmental restoration and maintenance. The state's share in money to pay those bond interest rates takes up about half the money in the pot. The Florida Department of Transportation then gets a slice, as do state economic development trust funds. What's left is divvied up among a list of special interest trust funds, and the two groups receiving the most of what's left are the Land Acquisition Trust Fund, which would be the beneficiary if Amendment 2 is approved, and a host of state and local housing trust funds.
This isn't math, it's arithmetic.
That's Mark Hendrickson. He's president of the Hendrickson Company, which works on affordable housing and finance issues. He's also a board member of the Florida Housing Coalition. While he supports environmental funding, he sees Amendment 1 and its guaranteed 33% for the environment as a money grab.
They've built in a huge, huge increase to the funding of their program. Now, there's nothing wrong with you know, funding more money for the environment, but what it is, in my viewpoint, wrong to say, well, we're just going to be getting the same amount that we've always gotten, and that's just not accurate.
Amendment 1 supporters argue if the legislature doesn't make any changes to the doc stamp tax level and environmental funding is constitutionally guaranteed, money for non-conservation uses, such as affordable housing, will still grow. That's probably true as long as the dollars collected by the tax continue to grow. But what affordable housing supporters like Hendrickson and Stone worry about is if lawmakers decide in the future to pour this pot of money into the general fund if and when times get tight, like they did during the Great Recession.
Affordable housing is totally dependent upon doc stamps. And if there's other programs funded with doc stamps, that's fine. That's, you know, there is enough money there to have multiple programs. But if one program says all of a sudden, well, we're going to take 33% of the pie, that means that there's left less doc stamp revenues in the end for general revenue, and that threatens the funding for anything else that gets funded with dock stamp revenues, be it housing or transportation, to mention the two main programs that are funded with dock stamps other than the environmental program.
If Amendment 1 is approved, if a third of all the dock stamps that are paid to Tallahassee go to land conservation and restoration, what could that mean on the legislative side for funding for affordable housing?
Anytime that there's less general revenue coming from dock stamps, it will put the programs that get funded out of trust funds from dock stamps at risk. So it will put housing funding more at risk than it has been. We're going to still be making the case that we make every year to the legislature, which is affordable housing programs are good. They are beneficial to the state. They're good for the economy. And there's a trust fund there, and that the monies in that trust fund should be appropriated for housing. So we'll still be making that argument. But we know that in years where the budget is coming up short, that there's going to be more pressure on the legislature to take housing money to fill holes in general revenue, and a hole that's made significantly. And I mean significantly, not like $5 million or $10 million, but billions of dollars bigger by Amendment 1.
When was the last time affordable housing in Florida was funded at a level that makes you comfortable?
Comfortable is an interesting thing. I think that the last time that we had full funding, which is I think what should be there every year, was about 6 or 7 years ago. But in this current year in the legislature, they made a really big step back towards that. So while they didn't do full funding, they came a lot closer to it than they have for several years.
The uses of the funding have provided assistance to literally thousands of residents in the county.
Again, Ralph Stone, Director of Housing Finance and Community Development for Broward County.
It may be residents that had the benefit of being able to rent a brand new affordable apartment, or it may be an individual homeowner that's handicapped and on Social Security that can't afford to upgrade their access to their house or their bathrooms for handicap accessibilities.
If the 33% of dock stamps were to go to land purchase and conservation, what would that mean for planning for your agency?
Well, in years that the economy is good, you know, everyone assumes that the dock stamps will fully fund the environment and economic development, transportation, and affordable housing. And in those years, in effect, we'll be made whole and we'll have, you know, that $15 million countywide to do those programs that I mentioned previously. If we have a poor economic year statewide, one-third of the entire bucket will always go to the environment, and then the reduced amount will be available for affordable housing, transportation, economic development, and those funds would be exposed to being swept to balance other portions of the state budget should the legislature choose to do that as they have in the past. So, you know, it's really from year to year. So it makes planning hard. When it's available, it's put to good use.
Ralph Stone heads up the Housing Finance Authority in Broward County. He and state advocate Mark Hendrickson are worried about Amendment 1 protecting money for the environment but not doing the same for affordable housing funds. Amendment 1 supporter and real estate developer in South Florida, Don Peebles, sees this proposal as the opportunity for a bigger discussion about the use of land in the Sunshine State.
A big part of that discussion has got to be affordable housing. Where there's a weakness in South Florida is good quality housing for our workforce and for our middle-income residents who are constantly being priced out of the core markets and pushed further and further away from employment centers. You know, I think, you know, this, you know, given the growth that's taking place here, I hope that it prompts the political leaders to really begin to take a real strong effort to tackle these issues now, so that you know, while we're in a good, strong market, we can address them, you know, and set our course correctly going forward.
Now, the proposed amendment has gained strong support among Floridians, Recent surveys of likely voters show 75% support for the constitutional guarantee, well above the 60% vote necessary for it to pass. Still to come on our program, the fight to buy land is about protecting water.
In Ohio this past August, the city of Toledo, for 3 days, its water supply was shut down because of toxic algae infiltrating their water supply. We can't afford to have that in Florida.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, Amendment 1, Paying to Protect Florida by the Acre and the Gallon. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. So about 1 in 4 acres of Florida land is publicly managed, and we have a map of federal lands statewide and state lands here in South Florida on our website. You can find it right there on the front page at WLRN.org. Also, send us a note about your favorite protected place in the Sunshine State. Maryland tweeted, "One of my favorite places is Fern Forest. It's a nature center, an urban wilderness area in Broward County." Father Gator tweeted us that the state of Florida Visit Florida TV commercials sure do seem to rely on natural beauty to sell the state. Well, sunsets in South Florida certainly sell up north in the wintertime. The proposed Amendment 1 on the ballot this fall is geared toward governing state money to buy land. Some of that land would be bought to protect what's surrounding and what's under the land, water. The story of land here in the Sunshine State, after all, is the story of water, controlling it, directing it, collecting it, draining it, cleaning it, using it. All of these come together on the peninsula in South Florida in the Everglades. Dawn sent us a tweet at WLRN saying she supports Amendment 1 and the Everglades, which protects Florida's drinking water supply for a healthy economy. Let us know what you think on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. We met Eric Eichenberg, CEO of the Everglades Foundation, at the south entrance of the Everglades National Park in Homestead.
This is a vital moment when we look at conservation in Florida. We have to provide a clean water supply, not just for today, but for generations to come.
The amendment question is about guaranteeing tax revenue from the state toward land conservation. How does that become a water quality issue?
Well, the amendment calls for, as you've just mentioned, a portion of real estate tax revenue, documentary tax collections, to be set aside, a third of those total collections, for both water and land. So when we talk about water quality, it's the infrastructure that's needed. It's the number of projects, including Everglades restoration projects, that are critical to ensure that we have clean water in the state. I think it's important for voters to understand that just to our north, a few states north of us in Ohio this past August, the city of Toledo, for 3 days, its water supply was shut down because of toxic algae infiltrating their water supply. We can't afford to have that in Florida. So what are we going to do as Floridians to ensure that dollars are being set aside to invest in clean water? Water is the new oil as we move forward.
We are at the south entrance of the Everglades National Park. This park will not be a recipient of any of these state dollars if voters approve it.
Well, it's ironic that just this past June, the National Academy of Science came out with a report, their annual report to Congress, that shows that the Everglades National Park remains starved for water. The replumbing of the Everglades, the work that the Everglades Foundation is pursuing each and every day along with other groups, is to replumb this ecosystem, to bring it will never get back to that original flow of water, but to be able to keep more water on the peninsula, to move water from Lake Okeechobee south into the central Everglades, the bridging of Tamimi Trail that's happening today as we speak. All of that to say enough water to get into Everglades National Park and then ultimately into Florida Bay. It is a connectivity that's vital to this ecosystem. It's vital to our economy in South Florida, and it's one where, standing here in the southern part of the park, what's going to happen to the north will benefit this national treasure. The most important part about these dollars that voters need to understand is that this is not a tax increase. Taxes are being collected when real estate transactions occur. So when that happens, that revenue sent up to Tallahassee, a third of those total dollars are set aside for restoration projects, management, land management, land acquisition. Again, it's an effort to ensure that we keep as much water on the peninsula so that it flows south, so that ultimately it hydrates a park such as Everglades National Park. And as you see here, as we're standing here, this parking lot is beginning to fill up. You have birders, you have tourists, both international and domestic tourists that come to Florida. This Everglades National Park is a jewel in this country that unfortunately is not well known yet. The hope is, as we continue to highlight these issues, this particular park is at the forefront.
There's a lot of hands in that till that the Land Conservation Amendment 1 would pull dollars out of. The Department of Transportation gets funding out of those documentary stamps from real estate. Affordable housing gets funding out of there as well. Why not compete for these dollars at the legislative level as opposed to the constitutional level?
The challenge is when we have difficult economic times and tough decisions are made at that point. As we are trying to keep this economy afloat during those times, and we've experienced economic difficulties just in a short period of time, the importance of it is to keep our economy thriving. An issue that continues to be highlighted is the need for tourism, to keep people coming to Florida. And they come here not just for our amusement parks, but also for outdoor recreation, for hunting, for fishing, for boating. All of those type of activities rely on clean water. So as those decisions are made both in good and bad economic times, when we talk about conservation in this state, it cannot afford to be neglected. And what this is doing, for 20 years, mind you, this is a 20-year commitment. And over that time, those investments will allow for generations to experience the beauty of this state.
In the meantime, we know an economic cycle is going to lead to some kind of economic weakness in the years ahead. It's the business cycle. It's an economic cycle. It's going to happen. If voters approve Amendment 1, the dollars for conservation will not be at risk because they're constitutionally protected, but dollars for affordable housing, dollars for education, dollars for job creation would be at risk.
We have a $70-plus billion state budget that legislators and the governor of this state have to balance every single year. You have to balance your budget. We're talking about less than 1% of the state budget going to conservation, our natural beauty here in Florida. It's to ensure that when we talk, we don't have a Toledo, Ohio. We don't have a California where there's water restrictions that have now been in place for months. We're trying to avoid what we saw last summer along both the east and west coasts of Florida with toxic algae forming in the waterways. And I may point out, too, that last summer, the tipping point of that crisis was when Florida realtors stood up and said, we're losing home sales. Again, it goes back to an economic impact. If we can ensure that we have the proper amount of water, quantity of water and quality of water, a supply and clean water, it's beneficial not just for the ecosystem or not just for the habitat or the wildlife, but it's for our economy.
What's the message to affordable housing advocates or transportation infrastructure advocates that say those dock stamps, those real estate taxes have been used to provide affordable housing for Floridians, have been used for transportation projects, have been used for the general fund to benefit all Floridians? Let's compete for those dollars equally on an even playing field, not constitutionally protect one set of dollars for one special interest.
This is infrastructure, and I will say that we don't blink when decisions are made to build a tunnel connecting the Port of Miami. We don't blink when communities are rallying to expand airports and seaports. That's infrastructure that's needed as we're back to a growth state, as we soon become the third most populous state in the union. We have to have that type of infrastructure. But another part of infrastructure that's vital is water infrastructure. So by investing less than 1% of the state budget to ensure that we have clean water and we have the infrastructure in place to move water from the headwaters from Orlando to the lake, south into the central part of the Everglades, under the bridging of Tamimi Trail and into this Everglades National Park, That is an investment that we all should embrace. Water infrastructure is just as vital as transportation infrastructure or any ways of moving goods and services around Florida.
Are there any guarantees in the amendment language that the land conservation and restoration efforts will be concentrated on water quality as opposed to any other land conservation effort that another interest may have?
This is not an Everglades-centric amendment. We have to ensure we get this right on a statewide basis. And the Florida legislature is having discussions about comprehensive water policy. That does impact the springs. It impacts Apalachicola Bay. It certainly impacts the Everglades, our beaches, and our estuaries, our coastal estuaries. All of those issues have to come together and say, what is the direction we want to take this state to ensure we have clean water, that we are able to preserve this water supply as we continue to grow? So as the amendment's implemented and the Florida legislature will have to implement this amendment, there will be other interests that need to be addressed as well. And in our view, from the Everglades Foundation's perspective, there will be enough dollars that we can see progress and results.
You have sat in the office next to the governor's office. You've been a gubernatorial chief of staff with Governor Crist.
Over time, environmental issues, and I'll speak directly to the Everglades, because naturally, being with the Everglades Foundation, that's our priority. But that has been a...
And you were involved with a significant land deal with U.S. Sugar and Governor Crist.
True. That's right, back in 2008. But when you look at Everglades restoration or Everglades protection, it's a unifying issue. Both Democrat and Republican administrations in Tallahassee, the Florida legislature, majority Democrat, majority Republican, it has been an ecumenical issue. It's been a unifying issue. It's one where voters can see as an issue that brings people together. Even in Washington, as much as they're paralyzed by gridlock, preserving this natural beauty, this national treasure, America's Everglades, rallies people. And it's important. And having served in government, seeing it, conservation, the ability to ensure that these lands are protected, that we do have clean water, it's one that both parties should embrace. And the good news is they both are.
We are in front of a map of the Everglades. Give me an idea, Eric, of if Amendment 1 passes with voters this fall. Point to me some of the areas in the Everglades National Park and the areas around Lake Okeechobee that you would look at for areas that could benefit from these dollars being directed toward land conservation and restoration.
Last summer, as Lake Okeechobee filled due to excess rain, the only option today by the Army Corps of Engineers, and this is the Army Corps of Engineers' specific responsibility, is the welfare and safety of that dike, the Herbert Hoover Dike around the lake. The only option at the moment is to release that water, which is polluted, and when that happens, billions of gallons of water going east and west, it decimates the local economy and the local ecology. So what are we going to do to fix that? There are lands that have been identified in both of those basins, both of those regions of our state, that could go towards purchase, that you could store local runoff, lake water, to reduce the polluted water that's going east and west. There's lands that are available to the state of Florida south of Lake Okeechobee that could be bought so that you can store water. All of this, Tom, is simple in our view. What we have to do is ensure we don't waste water. We waste too much water out the tide. So these restoration projects that this amendment addresses clearly, the land acquisition that this amendment would authorize, it's allowing water to remain on the peninsula, it's moving water into the central part of the Everglades, and ultimately right here into Everglades National Park.
When you talk about last summer, there's a smaller map here. Lake Okeechobee, in the dike around the lake, of course, and the water wound up going out, at least on the east coast side, the Indian River Lagoon area, and we saw those algae blooms, really fed by the fertilizer, phosphate-rich water that was being released from the lake. Where in this area would you see progress if Amendment 1 is passed? Where would you see progress in 5-10 years?
Well, that's a great question, because I believe we're at a critical juncture where the investments that are going that potentially come from Amendment 1, you could see projects finish within that 10-year period. You have reservoirs, you have stormwater treatment areas, man-made wetlands that are designed to reduce pollution from the water. They're being constructed today. Let's not wait 10, 15, 20 years to finish these restoration efforts. That's what the public has asked. How long is it going to take us to fix this problem? So now we're being faced with a potential of a tremendous amount of resource over a 20-year period. Let's put flags in the ground. Let's ensure that we have ribbon cuttings to say that we're restoring the Everglades, we're fixing the coastal water quality problems, we're ensuring that our beaches are managed properly as an enticement to tourists, we're protecting our springs to the north. All of these issues are tremendously important that we get it right.
Everglades Foundation CEO and Amendment 1 supporter Eric Eichenberg. Do you have a favorite protected place in the Sunshine State? Let us know on Twitter, at WLRN. Join the conversation with the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Still to come on our program, the effort to keep Florida's state budget out of the state constitution.
But imagine, if you will, that every group out there who maybe didn't get the funding they thought their program should get during the Great Recession took the course of Amendment 1 and tried to get their special program funded through constitutional mandate.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, Amendment 1, paying to protect Florida by the acre and the gallon. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Amendment 1 asks voters to decide if a certain amount of money should be dedicated to protecting water and land resources under the state's constitution. If approved, it removes the environment from the list of debates every spring during the legislative session in Tallahassee. Now, opponents like the Florida Chamber of Commerce worry about constitutionally requiring spending, any spending. Join the conversation on Twitter at WLRN, the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Soy Ape tweets, real question seems why hinge state revenue on whims of unstable economy? Other states do fine with state income tax. Of course, there is no state personal income tax in the Sunshine State. The Miami Herald's Karen Rundlett spoke with David Hart, Executive Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Florida Chamber of Commerce.
There isn't any organized opposition to Amendment 1. But your organization, the Florida Chamber, and a few others have taken a no position on it. What is the argument for a no vote on Amendment 1?
Our board of directors looks at constitutional amendments with really a litmus test question when we determine whether or not we'll support an amendment. And the litmus test question, going back over a decade now, has been, can the issue be handled by the legislature, either in budget, the normal budget practice, or in statute? And in the case of Amendment 1, funding for environmentally sensitive land and water purchases, the answer to that question is yes, it can be handled by the Florida legislature. And in fact, two different times in our state's history, and two different governors, and in a bipartisan way, the state has had very robust land buying programs that were funded first through Preservation 2000 and then through Florida Forever, so that today in Florida, nearly one out of every 4 acres in Florida is already protected for environmental reasons and held by the public.
But there was frustration by the citizenry that clearly led to this even being on the ballot, that those funds disappeared. How do you address that?
Well, I wouldn't say there was frustration by the citizenry. I think there was frustration by a small group of environmentalists that didn't feel like their special program was adequately funded during the Great Recession. And look, others would look at the actions of the legislature and say they performed admirably during a time when all of us as individuals and families and the state were struggling in the Great Recession. They made difficult choices and managed to balance the budget. But imagine, if you will, that every group out there who maybe didn't get the funding they thought their program should get during the Great Recession, or imagine if every one of those groups took the course of Amendment 1 and tried to get their special program funded through constitutional mandate. How hard would it be under those conditions for Florida to balance its budget and behave in a fiscally responsible way? That's the direction California went where they've got so many mandates in their constitution, it's very difficult for them to balance their budget anymore.
Is there an example you can point to in California that's comparable, a specific issue?
Well, there's a multitude of issues in California. In fact, it's so bad in California, they've put so many mandates in their constitution that I asked the California Chamber of Commerce's foundation about this, and they pointed out that in California's budget, if you remove everything that is set by federal programs and you remove everything that's mandated in the California Constitution, their legislature and governor only have control over between 10 and 20% of their state's budget. This amendment, Amendment 1, is a step in that direction and in the wrong direction. But imagine if we have another recession sometime in the next 20 years. What are we setting ourselves up for?
Some listeners will hear this kind of argument and believe that the chamber is anti-environment. What do you say to them?
I'm a sixth-generation Floridian, and I love Florida's environment. I think it's admirable that we've set aside so many beautiful places for future generations. And I know the members of the Florida Chamber of Commerce feel the same way. We believe Florida is the best place on the planet to live, work, and play. And the quality of life here in Florida is very, very special and one we want to protect for future generations. But quite simply, we believe funding for environmental programs related to further land and water purchases ought to be done in the normal budgetary process where it competes with other funding obligations like education, healthcare, transportation investments.
For those of our listeners who might not know, what does the Florida Chamber do?
The Florida Chamber of Commerce exists to secure Florida's future and work on things like promoting the number one business climate in the United States and in the world, improving things like our regulatory climate, our legal climate.
Can you give me a breakdown on membership to either political party, percentages of your membership, which political party they might belong to?
We don't keep track of our members in terms of their political party.
Was this a robust debate about Amendment 1? Or was it a pretty easy decision to say no?
Because our board of directors and our policy council have had this threshold litmus test question for over a decade, it was an easy conversation to have with our policy council and our board of directors about could this issue of more purchases for environmental purposes be done by the legislature through the budget or through statute. And since the answer to that question was yes, it can, I think it made for a pretty simple answer, and we stayed true to our longtime direction on this. And by the way, it's not talked about very often, but those funds right now go largely to affordable housing. And so, you know, this is a pretty clear choice for voters. Do they want to take money away from affordable housing and set aside more dollars specifically for land and water purchases when the state already has over 9.3 million acres set aside for environmental purposes? And it may be that there's more to buy, but it can certainly be accomplished through the normal budget process.
What's an example of an affordable housing program that would be hurt by this?
Well, there's two programs. One's called SHIP and one's called SAIL, but these are dollars that would normally flow down into local government programs and help low-income families with first-time down payment assistance, for example.
David Hart, Executive Vice President of the Florida Chamber of Commerce, thank you.
Karen, thanks for reaching out to us. We're delighted to have some time with you.
This is WLRN, Miami Herald News. I'm Karen Rundlett.
And still to come on the Sunshine Economy, the intersection of recreation and ideology.
Yes, it protects water quality, which is good, but it also allows us to use these areas and enjoy them.
A funding proposal does not belong in the Constitution.
We'll be right back.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy Amendment 1, paying to protect Florida by the acre and the gallon. So what is your favorite protected place in the Sunshine State? Maybe camping at Bahia Honda in the Keys, horseback riding in the Loxahatchee Slough Natural Area in Palm Beach County? Let us know on Twitter, at WLRN, use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Andrew tweets, constitutional requirement to safeguard foundation of everything in Florida, including economy. Andrew continues, the price is right. Well, Amendment 1 question boils down to an issue of protecting payments. If approved, Florida voters would add a new section to Article 10 of the state constitution. The article is a grab bag now of issues governing everything from lotteries to limitations on using nets for fishing to banning confinement of pigs during pregnancy in Florida. If Amendment 1 on this ballot passes, it would be tacked on below the section of the Constitution governing how Florida spends money from the 1998 Master Tobacco Lawsuit Settlement on tobacco education and prevention. Now, there is no organized opposition to Amendment 1. Instead, opponents criticize the process at use here.
Hi, this is Mike Hansen from Surfside, Florida. I oppose Amendment 1 because it's a wrong solution to a grave problem. A funding proposal does not belong in the Constitution. This is a legislative process. There's no question that our collective priorities have failed to protect the environment. Let's instead hold the legislature accountable to do the right things, or use the ballot box to remove them from office.
Mike is a member of the WLRN Miami Herald Public Insight Network, and we heard similar opposition to the proposal's constitutional money guarantee.
Hi, my name is Maria Luisa Castellanos, and I live in unincorporated Dade County, Miami-Dade County. And ballot Amendment 1, I think it's a bad idea because it could cut into affordable housing, which is a very necessary thing in our state. And I think it's too inflexible and doesn't leave the legislature any room to move things around in case of another recession.
Other members of the Public Insight Network, like Eileen Higgins, though, support Amendment 1, thanks to the enjoyment that she receives from the Florida environment. In fact, she's already voted for Amendment 1, taking advantage of early voting. If enough Floridians join Eileen and pass Amendment 1, it would guarantee environment funding for Florida for the next 20 years. Well, there certainly are plenty of voices in this debate this fall over how to pay to protect Florida's environment. Affordable housing supporters, real estate developers, conservationists are among the chorus. No matter whom you listen to, the sunshine here in the Sunshine State shines on all of us. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. California to the New York Island.
From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
As I was walking down that ribbon of a highway,
I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw before me that golden valley.
This land was made for you and me.